What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's David, Candace, and Isaac. We are here. New season. Grizz Media Day was yesterday. We were there. You all watched videos, I'm sure. There was a lot of content coming out of Media Day. Some new faces in there. I'm going to start off saying that there's some of y'all that are going to be eating some crow when it comes to my guy Z. That dude looked good yesterday, and we obviously didn't see any basketball stuff. We just saw him coming in and sitting down at the table. But for somebody that looked like they were lacking confidence last year, the way that he handled Media Day and some of the quotes that he had during Media Day has got me over the moon for this dude this season. And listen, I don't ever hope that a Grizzlies player does bad. I just want to make that part clear. I hope that you guys know that I don't want anybody to do bad. But between Laravia, Roddy, and Zaire, because of the frame, I want to see Zaire break out more than any of those guys. Because if you get a 6'10 wing that can guard multiple positions, the length that this team has is just ridiculous. You play, say, Santi, Jaren, and Z all in the same lineup, and those guys are all switchable defenders, along with Bane and Smart, or Ja and Smart, or Ja and Bane. Regardless of who else you put on the floor with that kind of length, this defense is going to be pretty nasty. So I hope the confidence carries over into the season, and we see kind of a building on what his rookie season was this year from Zaire. It's been a while since we've heard from all of you guys, any of us, honestly. We took a pretty big break, and then now we're back. So, Isaac, let's go to you first, man. What was your biggest takeaway from Media Day?
Oh, I actually had several takeaways, but to kind of touch on the Zaire Williams thing, he came in, man, he's definitely not lacking confidence, man. If anybody that saw any of the clips or were at Media Day or saw any of the videos, man, he was on one. I mean, he was talking cash money yesterday, man, said twice that nobody's worked harder than him this summer. He wanted to let you know that nobody has worked harder than him this summer. And, man, confidence sometimes can be half the battle. I think last year it seemed like he kind of lost some of that confidence. The team, the coaches, the front office kind of said that he wasn't injured. There was some thought that he didn't play in summer league because maybe he was still dealing with some injury stuff, and that's kind of what was going on. They made it clear that that wasn't the case. They just had a plan to straighten him from the tendonitis and stuff that he was dealing with last year. I guess they just didn't want him out there playing in that situation. They just wanted to kind of get him on whatever plan they had him on and try to get rid of that tendonitis. But he said he's ready to go. And if you could give this front office and coaching staff truth serum, I think – of the three, with Zaire Williams, Jake Laravia, and David Roddy, if they had their preference, I think Z is the one that would emerge. I think he's the one that fits their profile of what they would like from that small four position. As David says, 6'10", that length, the potential on two-way potential on a defensive end, get to that mid-range. I think that's something that I would like to see him continue to work on. And we see him, especially his rookie year, occasionally lock down three-point shots. That could be a part of his game, especially in the corner. I think he's the guy that they would like to merge and do these preseason games. I think that battle between those three guys is going to be the main thing I'm going to be keyed in on. And he said he's coming in there to take it, man. So we'll see what Laravia and Roddy have to answer him. But Z says he's ready, man. I'll believe it when I see it. I haven't always been a guy that's been super confident after last year on what we saw, that he's going to be end up being a player for this team. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, man. And we're going to see Sunday night if he's actually as ready as he says he is, man. But he came in talking cash, man. So we're going to see, man. I'm excited to watch
it. Yeah, I would say my overall takeaway on Media Day was just on the Zaire thing, I won't say too much other than I expect him to do a lot better this year. I have always said that. I said that last season, as rough as he looked, I figured he was going to have a bounce back season. And so I do expect for him to show himself at least as a rotational player. Now, maybe he exceeds that expectations, but if he can be a valuable role player for this team, that's huge. Just, you know, if he goes back to last half of rookie year Zaire. That's amazing. It does wonders for this team alone. And maybe he can exceed that. like Isaac said, he showed a lot of confidence. But overall, just on media day, my number one takeaway was just that this is a different team. I think they are taking a new tone from top to bottom. You can just see the moves on the front office, actually making some like win now investment type of moves from Taylor Jenkins talking about his different, like he wants to approach things differently. But he mentioned sometimes being stubborn about things, which I found to be a particularly interesting quote in his presser, and how he wants to change his coaching philosophy. Well, he said strategies, coaching strategies. He said his core philosophies will remain the same, but he'll change his coaching strategies. And I think that's just trickled down to the players. And it's still going to be a team that enjoys themselves and I think has fun. So I'm not saying they'll be a joyless team, but they seem to have a seriousness about them. And really, they've talked about the expectations they have on themselves to make a deep playoff run or win a championship. But this time it's a little bit more walk in the walk. It just seems like the tone, obviously they haven't played any games or anything yet, but just the tone seems a little bit more focused maybe. And that some of that comes from the veteran leadership, right? Just from hearing Derrick Rose and his presser and hearing Marcus Smart and his presser, and just you can just hear the influence that they really kind of sort of made already just early on. Desmond Bane has sort of echoed a lot of those sentiments as well, so I'm pretty sure he'll be a big part of that. And I think that's a big step. So the question marks for this team had a lot to do with maturity, had a lot to do with, well, coaching and the ability to make adjustments. And if they can make a turn in those areas, then really the sky's the limit for this team.
So let's kind of run down the roster here. We let off with Zaire, but we're going to talk about Ja Morant here. And what we learned yesterday is he's going to be able to practice with the team. He's going to be able to travel with the team, but he's not going to be involved in anything publicly with the team until after the suspension is over. So, Candace, I'll throw this one back to you first. Were you surprised at all with the fact that Ja is going to be this involved with the team, being that he's on a 25-game suspension?
I was a little surprised, but I was kind of hoping that they would find some kind of medium, because I didn't think it did Ja any good to say, get more focused, get your act together, but here's 25 undisciplined, like non-structured time. You know what I mean? Like, find something to do in the meantime. Like, I could have seen a world where they'd done that, just because they have tended to be, you know, pretty. I mean, it's a controversial thing, but given some of the other suspensions that have come down, Ja's had the toughest suspension as of late. And so, yeah, I didn't know if they'd just be super hard on him because he's such a popular name. But I am glad with their decision, because I think it does make sense to have him in a structured, disciplined environment where he can be focused on the right things instead of just out with who knows what doing, you know. And I also think it helps take away a lot of the question marks in terms of chemistry, in terms of, you know, cohesion. And I kind of always thought that was a little overblown anyway, but because I thought they had plenty of time, you know, when he got back to work out that kind of thing. But it's a huge deal. And while I'm a little surprised, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Isaac, where are you at on this, man?
Yeah, man, I was surprised, because that's usually not how these things work. Usually when you're suspended, you really can't be around the team. And the fact that he can fully practice with the team, be around the team, he's going to be traveling with the team, I think it's huge for two reasons. Candace kind of touched on some of those reasons. First, on just the human side of just being able to be around the guys. You're not away working out on your own. And working out on your own is fine. You knew even if he couldn't be around the team or practice or whatever, Ja was going to put the work in. But it's not the same as being on the practice floor with your teammates, building that chemistry, building that camaraderie. I just think it's huge. And one thing that we've seen with this team is how they're super cautious with things like this. So my fear was that 25 games, with the kind of how they usually handle these things, would turn into 30 to 35.
Right.
And Taylor Jenkins said that game 26 himself, he mentioned, he said game 26, basically that Ja's going to be back. And I think having him on the practice floor, having him being able to be around the team kind of feeds into them being able to, him being ready to go right out the gate. And usually you would have think they would have held him out probably 5 or 10 more games to quote unquote ramp up as they usually do with these types of situations. And that's not going to be the case with this. So I think it's absolutely huge. That's obviously the biggest news that came out of media day, man. And just to have him in the building with the guys, man, I think that's going to help him maybe to keep the ground running. And I was talking about this earlier today in one of the Grizz spaces. Ja's one of those guys that kind of has that Jordan Kobe syndrome where they try to find anything, any little slight or anything to kind of get themselves going and motivate him. Man, can you imagine how much he has built up through this situation? And to be able to come in fresh, healthy, I just think all this, I think he's going to have a monster year. Like, you talk about chip on his shoulder. You got people out there saying all kind of crazy stuff. Like, they've just forgotten who Ja Morant is. I mean, I saw somebody the other day saying that Jalen Bronson was better than him. Yeah. They're putting out, like, lists with the top point guards. He's not on them. Like, top 30 players in the NBA list. He's not on any of these lists. He sees all this stuff, trust me. Like, he's still on there. Like he can say he's on the high A's and kind of be all Twitter. He's still reading this stuff. I don't have any doubt, man. I think he's going to be fired up and ready to go. People were talking about him at practice today that he wasn't smiling, man. I think he's just locked in. And yeah. I think once he comes back, man, I think he's going to go an absolute tear, man. I don't have any doubt. Knowing his personality, man, he's going to be ready to go.
He's not smiling. You should be afraid. That's
what exactly, that, man. That's bad for the league. You should be
very afraid. So I'm going to ask one more question, but Derrick Rose made a comment today. I don't know if you guys saw. He was talking about Ja Morant, and Derrick Rose himself said he's on an entire different level. And like the comment was kind of referring to like Derrick Rose coming up and where Ja Morant is. And, you know, Derrick Rose is highly regarded around like the basketball circle. There's a lot of love for Derrick Rose. Yep. And for him to say that Ja Morant is on a different level, that has to tell you something. And so for the people that are talking just wild, crazy stuff about Brunson and De'Aaron Fox and whoever else you want to add to that list, you don't have a 16-year veteran who has won an MVP in this league sitting here saying the same type of stuff about Brunson and Fox and these other guys. And I don't want to take – you don't have to bash somebody else to elevate a player, but I already had like a very – like, I don't know that my expectations for Ja could be lifted anymore. But that comment from Rose is like, okay, this is not just me making this up in my head. Other people that know far more about basketball are saying this kid is different. This kid is special. So I loved that he said that. We're talking about game 26, Ja Morant coming back. Do you think either Isaac, we'll go to you first, and then we'll bounce over to Candace. I know that he's going to be with the team. He's going to be practicing. He's going to be working out. Do you expect him to have any type of minute restriction when he comes back game 26?
Just kind of with the way this team operates, I think probably so for a little while. Unless Taylor Jenkins has turned over complete a new leaf and we see something different. He said he's going to try some different approaches. We don't exactly know what that means, but I think that's a positive that he's admitting that he's looking at evaluating himself and looking at things that he can do better. I think it was a really great quote for him to come out and say that. I think that is a really positive for this team. But I do think that there probably will be a minute restriction. We've kind of seen it. We saw it last year when he came back. They brought him off the bench. I don't know. I don't really have a strong opinion either way on that. I know a lot of people were upset that they brought him off the bench. A lot of people agreed, thought it was the right move. I don't really have a strong opinion either way. Just go by feel. However the coaching staff feels they kind of need to work him back in or where he's at, we'll see. But I do probably think – I don't think he's going to come back playing 35, 36 minutes game 26. I'd be surprised just past history of this organization. I just can't can't see that, but I don't think it's going to be with him being able to be with the team and practicing with the team. I don't think it's going to be something that continues for a while. Game 26, that might be the case, but I think a little bit after then, I think he's going to be back full tilt. And it's interesting. They said that they have a different plan for him. I don't know what exactly they meant by that. I don't know if they meant workout or just a plan off the court and some stuff that he has to work through, but I thought that was interesting as well to hear that. But that's the answer to the question. I think game 26 probably sold. Beyond that, I don't think it's going to be anything where it's going to be 2 weeks or something before we see him going full tilt.
I think more than likely they're not going to announce a formal minutes restriction, but that they do something kind of like what they did with Jaren last year, where it was like 31 minutes. I mean, I think he'll still play most of the game. It won't be anything that is obvious in terms of his limitations, because he would have been with the team the whole time. Now, if we're talking, he's not with the team, he's not practicing, that's different. But this team, the organization as a whole, really believes strongly in ramp up. He's going to have plenty of that. He's going to have plenty of that. So I don't think that's going to be a factor. And maybe just because he hadn't had the real NBA like game time minutes, they only play him like 31, 32 minutes. But I mean, this team doesn't play their guys long minutes anyway. So that's why I said, I don't think it'll be anything formal. They probably aren't going to play him long minutes to start. Maybe they change that whole strategy this year. Maybe everybody else does play like 37, 35 minutes, you know, but Ja doesn't. So we'll see where that goes. But I wouldn't expect too much. I mean, he's not going to do that bench thing. Again, all of that was because he was away for an extended period of time. But the Grizzlies, you know, have sometimes fast-tracked Ja anyway. Like, sometimes he's been the exception to the rule, yeah, even when it comes to injury and stuff like that. So yeah, I wouldn't think to anything too major. It's not something I worry about for sure, like me personally.
So let's touch on BC real quick. Kleiman talked about him. BC coming back off of his injury. One thing that I was not aware of, and maybe you guys caught it this summer, but BC had another surgery, and it was just like a cleanup surgery. Kleiman said that it did not affect his timeline at all. It was just one of those things where, hey, let's go in there and clean this up, and this is going to be our best bet in order to get you to come back and be healthy and be yourself. Kleiman didn't flat out say he is not going to play, but the way that he was wording things, and sometimes we overread, or like we read into things and we make it more than what it is, but he mentioned coming back next year. And his, like, and one, I can't remember, I was trying to record it and I was on photo instead of video, so I didn't get the audio clip on exactly what he said, but he was indicating to me that it was more than likely going to be next season before we see Brandon Clark. Candace, do you think that there's any chance that we actually see BC this year? Are you okay with them holding him out for the year? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if they've walked it back, then chances are you won't, because they were pretty confident, you know, prior to when asked about BC. And while they said that the procedure did not affect the timeline, I think that's just a lie. I think it did affect the timeline. That's obvious in the language that they were using prior to the procedure and the language that they're using after. And more than likely, it's just scar tissue or something that was built up. But I think that just made them want to slow their road and make sure that they're not rushing it. Because I think, from what I understand, BC was attacking rehab excellently. And so if he had scar tissue buildup or whatever, maybe it just made them realize, hey, let's not go too hard. Let's go with the process. Let things heal naturally. And so because of that mindset and that switch, I don't think we see him. Because otherwise, they could have just stuck with everything they were going to say before. And that is that he'll miss a sizable time of the season, but that eventually he would play. I don't foresee them waiting into the playoffs to bring him in. They're not going to put him in that type of intensity type situation his first time out. So I think we see him next year. It's disappointing, but I think it is best for him in his long term, because Brandon Clark is a athlete who he's an athlete because he's a professional athlete because of his athleticism. So like, you got to make sure that that doesn't go. And if you need to take a year to make sure that he's able to come back the same type of player, then that's what you do.
Yeah, I agree. Isaac?
I was going to say, I never really had any expectations that he would play this year. Even immediately after injury, I didn't feel like he would play this year just because of kind of Candace just touched on it, just the kind of player he is, being that poco stick athlete that gets off the floor quickly. That injury, that's a traumatic, just devastating injury for anybody, but definitely a guy that plays the way that Brandon Clark does. Right. And even if he was able to come back, it would be probably March, April, and you talk about going into the playoffs. There's just no reason to force it. A guy that's been out over a year at that point, even if he came back, he's not going to be even close to 100%. There's just no reason to force it. Because you would like to have Brandon Clark. You'd like to have Brandon Clark being the player that he was. And if he comes back at this year at that point, he's just not going to be that guy. So there's no reason to kind of try to force that. And you want to kind of protect that. You don't want him to come back too quick and re-injure it or get to the point to where he can't get back close to where he was. So there's just no reason to do it. This organization is extremely cautious anyway with injuries. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if we didn't see him. To me, it just doesn't really make any sense to bring him back that late in the season, especially when he's not going to be himself.
Yeah, 100%. So let's kind of stay on the injury train. Let's go the Steven Adams news. And I know, Isaac, this is something that you were kind of speculating last year that we were not getting the full story on this. Just like the way that they handled the situation, it seemed a little bit weird. And then listening to Steven Adams talk in his presser, like he obviously is not going to come right out and be like, oh, you know, like I think that I could have went, but they told me not to.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did say, he's like, you know, obviously I wish I could have been playing. He is a full go. Everything, you know, everybody indicated that he's a full go. But from what he was saying during media day, I think it was Drew that asked him, could you play, go out there and play a full load of minutes in game one? And Adams just said, he's like, listen, man, it's kind of irresponsible for me to say that, because he said the season isn't just one game. Game one is just game one of 82. And he talked about the process with the recovery of the knee injury and just trying to get back to himself. So after seeing what he said and after hearing Jenkins and Kleiman yesterday, do you feel any better about this injury, or do you still have some concerns?
I'm definitely still skeptical. And I think his interview at Media Day kind of possibly led into some stuff that I heard, like at the end of the season last year, during the playoffs. I was told by somebody that has contact with the medical team within the organization that said that Steven Adams wanted to play. Like, if it was up to him, he would have played in the playoffs and they wouldn't allow him to play. And he was kind of pissed. And I think he caught himself yesterday when he was about to kind of say that, but then he kind of walked it back a little bit. He caught himself and kind of reined it back in and just kind of basically said that wasn't the case. But I think he was about to reveal something that he didn't want to say, or the organization wouldn't have liked him to say it. That's kind of how I took from that interview. That's what he was about to do when he kind of reined himself back in. It's just a weird situation. I mean, you heard all kind of stuff. There was a report out of New Zealand that he actually had another surgery this offseason. And I think, I don't know if the organization, did they say yesterday that was actually true? Because before then, they had never really said that. Did Kleiman say yesterday that he did have something else done over the summer?
Not that I remember.
Yeah, because there was a report out there that he did have another surgery, and I've heard that he wanted to do kind of like holistic treatments, and the organization wanted him to have surgery. There was just all kind of weird stuff with this, and a lot of people saw yesterday when they say he was good to go, they're like celebrating. And I still need to see him 5-on-5. Like kind of the words, like you said, that it'd be, he still said it'd be irresponsible. They're still saying, I hope, or we expect. And this was an injury that's almost happened a year ago. And it was supposed to be a 4 or 5 week thing at that point. And here we are a year later saying that they expect and they hope that he's ready to go. It's like they don't really know what's going on with his knee. I don't know if it's something that they can't figure out. It's just not healing right. But I'm nervous about it because I'm thinking that even if he comes back, that maybe he's not the same guy anymore. Knee injuries are tricky, especially when you're talking about guys of his size. I mean, that can be something that lingers. We've seen that with big man happen a lot. So he's saying like now, like I said, it's almost a year later, and he's still saying that he couldn't go out there and play right now. He doesn't feel comfortable with that. And that's kind of same tone that you're getting from Taylor Jenkins and Zach Kleiman as well. I don't know, man. We'll see. But I'm still skeptical. I know they're saying he's full go, and I think they're going to put them out there in practice, but it's like they don't know how the knee is going to respond. I mean, he even said it himself on one of the Grind City shows yesterday, maybe on with Jessica Benson, that you don't know how the knee is going to react until you get out there. So I'm not fooled in on everything's going to be cool with that. That's something I'm definitely going to be watching. I don't really expect him to play any of these preseason games, so I don't think we'll see it there. But got a little bit of time for the season start, man. But that's a big, big question bar, because if he's not right, he's not able to go. That really changes some things for this team. They don't have a lot of depth there. Shout out to X and what he was able to do in the playoffs, man. But he's still an undersized big. He can't replicate what Steven Adams does for this team. We saw that in the series against the Lakers and what Anthony Davis was able to do. They really need QE, man, Steve-O to be out there healthy and ready to go, man. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that going forward, but I definitely still have some questions about it.
Yeah, I think everything makes sense. Now, it started off really weird that I would still give. I think a lot of stuff that you were hearing, Isaac, about there being disagreement about him wanting to play versus them not wanting to play, especially if you didn't want to get like surgery or anything, or you didn't want to, you know, you wanted to go holistic and they probably didn't know much about that route, decided it was best to hold him out. Like that part makes sense. I don't like how weird they were about that whole situation, but nevertheless, I think it makes sense why they're saying you don't know how the knee is going to respond. He's been away from the team. There's been no team activity. So I understand that yeah, you'd like to know, but the season ended is the reality. And so, like, if they didn't have any answers and the season had been going, then I think there's rightfully a question of why don't you know at this point. But the reality is, with no end, there's never going to be an injury that this team is going to say anything other than we expect or we hope. I mean, they use that language with everybody. So them saying we hope or we expect, because no team is ever going to outright come out and say we guarantee such and such is going to be out by such and such date, right? Like they're going to say we expect and things look like if no setbacks, right? Like they're always going to give those kind of caveats because injuries can be weird. So I think everything's on track now. Will Steve-O look rusty? I fully expect him whenever he plays to look rusty. I do, because he hadn't played for so long. And so now hopefully everything goes well and the knee does respond well. But I don't think anything is off track right now. And to me, as weird as they handled it, there's nothing suspicious now. I just think they're being real about, I mean, if there hadn't been any team activities and the medical staff hadn't really been evaluating Steven Adams over the summer, what are they supposed to say, really? What else do they have to go off of? So I think this training camp will be a big deal. Knowing that he's full go, I think it's a big step in the right direction. And you just got to hope things go accordingly. But I'm fairly optimistic. Even if he does miss some time, it won't be anything significant.
I was going to say real quick, my concern is that the initial timeline was 4 to 5 weeks and we're like 10 months out and you still don't, you're not sure. I feel like at this point, if it was what they said it was, they should have more confidence. I mean, I understand you're saying that he hasn't played and he hasn't been out there, but this was supposed to be a 4 or 5 week injury. And if you're still saying, well, we hope 10 months later, that is strange to me. Like, I don't think that doesn't sound like it's on track to me. That sounds like we don't know what the hell is going on, really. Like,
I think they've been clear that there was a original misdiagnosis and then a setback. So That part does make sense.
Yeah, that's a pretty big setback. Like a year, we were talking about almost a year later. Like, yeah. Seriously, when the injury happened, that's a pretty big setback. It's not like we're talking a few weeks here. Like, that's a – well, we'll see.
Wasn't it in February when his injury happened?
I think it was before.
It was before February, right? Hold on, I'll look. It was like the Lakers road trip, right? Because he was supposed to be West Coast road.
It was the Phoenix game, wasn't it? It was in Phoenix, wasn't it?
No, I thought they were playing the Lakers in the meaningless.
I thought it was Phoenix.
Maybe it was Phoenix, but I know it was on that West Coast road trip, right? Whenever they did that West Coast road trip is when he got injured. And so, like, I think they just put, what did they put, a knee sprain or something? And it obviously was like a PCL or MCL, something like that. And so if you're going to do that and you're going to heal holistically, a lot of athletes just go ahead and get some kind of procedure done for that.
Because I want to say, I think February is when they expected him back. I think around that middle of February was that 4 to 5 week period. So I think it might have been in January.
January 25th, the Grizzlies initially rolled out Adams for 3 to 5 weeks. And then on March 9th, the announcement came out that he underwent a stem cell injection and would be out an additional 4 weeks. So you end up with like 9 weeks after a projected 3 to 5 week thing. And then let's see.
The communication was butchered, but
go ahead, man.
Sorry. I was going to say, did you guys see where he said he got blue balls? I think it was with Jessica Benson. He said that he was one of the guys, I guess, against the Lakers in the playoffs where he was out there warming up. They thought he was going to play, and then he's like, "Man, yeah, I'm out there ready to go." And then I got blue balled. I was like, "Man, this dude is insane." But
and like, so probably like the one of the funniest moments in media day. Shout out to Hoop City Hellcat for asking the free throw question. I love that she likes free throws as much as I do.
The North Korea South Korea thing.
Yeah, but you know, she was talking about the Korean player shooting bank shots from the free throw line, and Adam just took it to a weird spot, and it was like, it was great. Like, everybody was cracking up whenever he walked out of the room with the North or South Korea
thing.
And he's like, "Oh, too soon?" Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah, man. He's wild, man. I love him, though.
There's no doubt that they fumbled the bag whenever it comes to discussing this injury. And I know you can never predict with these guys. Like, if you have an injury that has happened before and you know, okay, this player had this injury, he's having this surgery, this is the expected timetable, then okay, yeah, it's a lot easier. But it was initially like labeled a sprained PCL, and then now it's just kind of drawn out. And I think that, you know, his knee just has not reacted in the way that they wanted it to. So now we're in a position where we are 10 months down the road and we're still wondering what's this going to look like beginning of the season for them. And I think without Ja Morant, this team can definitely still win games. And without Steven Adams, this team could still win games. Without both of those guys, it gets tremendously harder for this team to win games because then you're missing rebounding.
Yeah.
And you know, not only are you missing the best player on the team, but you're missing, I would say, probably like the third most impactful player. Not that he's the third best player on the team, but for what he does for this team, I would say probably third most impactful player on the team. That's pretty brutal. Maybe not third, maybe fourth. He's up there as far as pecking order and what they contribute to this team winning. Although I am a little bit concerned about what's going to happen with his knee, the fact that they say he's a full go, you hope that these practices when he's going 5-on-5 and he's taking that contact that the knee reacts well, so he is a go at the beginning of the season. You know, it's If not, I think that you probably see some junior early on. You know, he's going to get – I think that he ends up getting rotation minutes.
Yeah, free my guy, man.
Yeah, so and listen, I'm not going to be mad if that's the case. I like junior, but I would – you know, like this team needs Adams on the floor. But if it means he misses a few games early in the season to get to where he needs to be when it's playoff time, when the wins really matter, that's what I want to see. I don't even know how long we've been going here, but, you know, there's a lot to cover, so this is probably going to be a longer episode. So strap in, take a long drive, hit a couple extra blocks to get all of this one in. Let's go to the boys that played this summer. Let's talk about Aldama and Jaren. And Isaac, I'm not even going to ask a question for these two guys. Seeing what they were able to do in FIBA, give me your takeaway.
With Jaren, it started off well. I know in the exhibition games, he was voted as the best player on the team by the members of the team. And he started off really well, but as the tournament went on, he had his struggles. I think a lot of it wasn't his fault. I think the team was poorly constructed. I think they put him in a position that he's not used to being in. They needed him to be a big-time rebounder. And he's just never really been that, playing the center position. He's used to playing against next to a guy like Steven Adams and having him there to help him on the boards while he could just focus on defense. And that wasn't the case on that team. They needed him to be both. I needed a big time rebounder and forcer back to the basket, that he was their big man. And that's just not really his game. So I think that's a lot of the reasons why he struggled. I don't put a lot of stock in there. A lot of people have kind of taking the thoughts on what they saw on him and FIBA, especially non-Grizzlies fans, into that into what he's going to do in the NBA. And I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think that has any bearing on what type of season he's going to have, because I think he could be back-to-back defensive player of the year. I don't have any questions about that. And I think he's going to have a big-time year. We saw him take a step offensively last year. So I don't take anything from FIBA and thinking that it's going to be – that's going to mean he's going to struggle this year in the NBA. As far as Santi, I think he really – flourished on that Spain national team. Was coming out the bench, really fell into his role and locked in. And I think that's really good for him. I think he was already kind of a confident guy. And I think you saw him yesterday. I think that can only help. He's engaged. So he has that going on. He told that story yesterday. But I think it's going to be a big year for both of these guys. I think they need Santi Aldama to take a step. And I think he is going to take that step this season. I have a lot of confidence in him. And what I've seen out of him is being a guy that can knock down shots for you off the bench and really fill in that role that he can score and roll off the bench for this team. We saw times early in the season last year where he even impressed me on the defensive end. I mean, he did some work on the defensive end, blocking shots. So if we can see a little bit more than that, and he could continue to work on his shooting, I think he's going to be a really good piece for this team going forward. But I, as far as the Jaren stuff, like I said, a lot of negativity coming out of that FIBA tournament on him, and I don't think that really has any bearing on what type of season he's going to have. I think he's going to have a big year.
Yeah, I'd agree with a lot of what Isaac was saying. In my mind, if anything, FIBA was always going to propel Jaren into a better year, no matter how it went, whether he started off poor and ended strong, or like ended up starting strong and then ending poor, or play poor the whole time. Either way, the role with which they had him used, which I agree was completely wrong. And quite honestly, they actually had some solutions in roster that they just didn't take advantage of.
Shout out to the great Steve Kerr. But anyway,
they really had some in roster solutions that could have worked to their advantage that they just opted not to use. Anywho, I think that Jaren having to play the five for events against them, I mean, these dudes are grown men. Like, these guys are, they're the dudes. Like, that's like going up against Joel Embiid every game. Like, and he's never been asked to play the center for extended periods of time in that way. So it was all very new to him. And I think he adjusted okay originally, but I also think, you know, we kind of know Jaren, and he gets, if you don't get him engaged offensively, you sort of, he tends to lack off in terms of effort in certain areas. And I think rebound is always going to be the first area to go for him. If he's not engaged offensively, and those guards, they hog the ball. You just put it out there. So that it was just an environment with which Jaren could thrive. That's not his game. FIBA game and NBA game are two different things, and they had him playing out of position. So nevertheless, the finishing things that we saw from him, the ability to better finish at the rim, we saw I think he actually be a little bit better in rebounding in the NBA just because of the experience. I'm not saying he'll be like some big time rebounder, 10 rebounds a game. I'm not saying he's going to do that, but I do think, he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder about everybody critiquing him about that. So I'm pretty sure he'll go into this season with an intentionality, proving that he can at least improve in that area. And just when you're in rhythm like that, I think it helps you overall. The experience that he got there, being in tough situations, adjusting different chemistries and really, like I said, learning a whole different role. In terms of Santi, I pretty much duplicate everything that Isaac said. I think that he really shined in his role. I think they put him in better positions to succeed his team, honestly, than compared to Jaren. But if nothing else, one thing I look for this experience for Santi to improve his NBA game in is he sometimes will be shaky in spotlight type situations, intense type situations. Like if road games, he tended to struggle.
Yeah, that Boston game last year stands out. Like
physicality sometimes would sort of, you see the shadow of Santi. And I think the FIBA experience can help him be more consistent in those areas. And to be honest, if he could be more consistent in those areas, that's plenty. Like, yes, you'd like to see him grow defensively, but even if he didn't do any of that, and he just was able to hit threes consistently on the road, or he was able to still hold his own, against more physical opponents, then that's an extra 10 wins maybe right there. I mean, really, because sometimes on the road, all they needed is one guy to make a three, and like, no one could, so they lost a lot of road games just because of that. So it was a good experience for both of the guys. There's a lot of negativity coming from Jaren. I stand by Jaren. I think he'll be fine going into the season, and both of the guys will be better for it.
So Adama mentioned being stronger, and he said not specifically just lifting more weight. He felt like he could move guys in the post more than he could in previous years, and talked about being strongest guy in the galaxy. The galaxy thing had me cracking up on media day, but I like the fact that he's putting in work, and he mentioned, that he needs to be stronger. He needs to be able to play a more physical game. But he also mentioned being versatile, playing like the three to the five. And that's something I heard a couple people mention yesterday, of the possibility of him playing the three. And I just, Aldama himself said that he's more of a natural four, but he's going to do whatever is best for the team, or whatever the coaches think is going to be best. I don't know that I believe that he has the foot speed to really play against some of the threes in the league. I think it's going to be matchup dependent. If you're matched up against a certain guy, I think that he'll be okay. But I think some of these the guys that play the three that are quicker would give him a lot of problems. Having one of the best, if not the best, help defender in the league on your team helps kind of cover up for that. But I'm happy where Santi is heading into the season. And then I expect Jaren to come out and have impressive numbers early on. I think that we saw a level of confidence shift in him from last season when Ja was out and he kind of took over. He was playing, when he got a guy that was smaller than him, he got the ball, he was taking advantage of the mismatches. And we didn't always see that before. So I think that we're going to get the best version that we've seen of Jaren to this point in his career this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to come out. And like you said, we saw when Ja Morant was out, him build that confidence. Like you said, man, when he got a mismatch, we hadn't seen that in the past. A lot of times he wouldn't take advantage of those mismatches. Then he was just getting the ball and just going with it. Anytime he had a mismatch, I expect him and Bane to have really big numbers in these first 25 games, along with Marcus Smart. I think those guys are going to really, really put up big numbers. So, again, I'm not worried about Jaren at all. I think I saw what I need to see. There was some times in the playoffs up against Anthony Davis where he kind of, you would say, where he kind of regressed back to some of the bad habits and some of the things that we had seen him do before. But Anthony Davis is just a different beast. When he's engaged and
when he's
himself,
healthy,
he's one of the best in the league right there at the top. Yeah, he just doesn't always play like that. But when he's locked in like that, man, he's going to give anybody trouble. And again, man, he's just Jaren still giving up a little bit of size to Anthony Davis. That's to be expected. But I'm not worried about Jaren at all, man. I saw him take the leap. A lot of the things that I want to see from him last year, before we saw it, especially at the end of last season. And I think, as Candace said, the rebounding stuff and people talking about that, I think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder about that. So I think he's going to focus on that a little bit more, and I think he's going to be better.
So we're going to kind of shotgun this a little bit here. I'm going to rattle. I want to talk about Marcus Smart, and I want to talk about Derrick Rose, but I want to end in that order, Smart first and end with Rose, and then we'll close the show. But I'm going to run off some of the guys that we haven't really talked about. Bane is a big player that we haven't talked about. We kind of touched on him a little bit. Everything went well with the toe surgery. He said, Terry Davis asked him, he said, when are we going to see Bane at 100%? And Bane said at Media Day, I'm about there. So, like, he's going to be ready. That toe is good. I'm not concerned about Bane. I think that he's going to have a huge year. So we're going to kind of loop him in with some of these other guys. So Bane, Jiddy, Kennard, Laravia, Lofton, Roddy. Who else have we not talked about? Am I missing anybody in there? Gigi Jackson. So you guys, Candace, we'll let you take off. You can touch on all of those guys, or if there's something specifically that you want to talk about, just give us your thoughts on kind of that group. And I hate to put Bane in there because obviously he's head and shoulders above. We know he's a starter. But, you know, there's a lot to cover whenever it comes to Rose and Smart. And I don't want this – while I know the show is going to go a little bit long, I don't want it to be a two-hour episode. So we're going to kind of combine some guys here so we don't make this thing crazy long.
Yeah, well I think Bane's going to – I think he's going to pick back up where he started off. Well, okay, he didn't technically start off the year. He started off a little slow, but he eventually kicked into that all-star mode where, I mean, he and Ja were looking like the best backcourt in the league. And so – I think he's got all-star potential. I've been an advocate that he can. I think this is his year. I think that without Ja being eligible to probably play enough games to be an all-star, Damian Lillard going to another conference, I think we can expect Bane to be an all-star. I think that's a reasonable expectation for him. He'll do well when Ja's out. As for the others, a lot of people down on Jiddy. I understand why. But I'm going to go the opposite of the direction that I went last year. Last year, I felt like he was set up for failure. I didn't like the position with which they were putting him. But I think you might go back to seeing classic Jiddy. I think you might see John Conchar be the guy who he wanted to be in limited opportunities, hustle guy, rebound guy, might give you a good game. But because you're not depending on him, he's a cherry on top. Sometimes, and that's where he needs to be. So I don't think he'll be the liability. I think he'll find the 3-point shot again. You want to keep him in a role, and you want that role to be consistent because he's not the kind of guy you can just pull around and give different minutes to. And he just doesn't, obviously he doesn't function under that that expectation, if you will. But he kind of started looking more like himself in the playoffs. Anyway, you kind of see him kind of coming back into shape. The 3-point shot still wasn't quite what it used to be. But that's what I expect from him. From Laravia and Roddy, those guys. And I really don't know what to expect. I got to be honest. I know it's a question of, you know, who's going to – I don't know who they're going to give the biggest shot in terms of the minutes at the wing. And so because I don't know that, it's really hard to set expectations for – I know those guys. I do think, again, I said Zaire, I think he'll bounce back. But I think Roddy and LaRavia's role depends upon how Zaire looks, because I agree. I can't remember if I was Isaac or David, but if I think that I think it was maybe Isaac. If they gave him True Serum, I think they want Zaire. So if Zaire can fill that role, then you're going to see minimized roles from those guys. And both of them in Summer League, no one really, they both had flashes. I think LaRavia was far more consistent overall, which was unexpected. But I don't know. I mean, the spacing was weird for Roddy in Summer League. And so I don't know which one of those guys could step up and be the guy and fill the role. So I think that's pretty much all my thoughts on that. I really don't think we'll see much of GG. I think the reality is they're trying to compete now. They've even made moves to compete and win now. So unless injuries happen or garbage time, probably you see GG about as much as you saw Junior last year. And yeah, I think that's all I got on that group.
Yeah, I'm going to try to not go too long, man. I'm going to land my plane on Derrick Rose. I do have some thoughts on him. I'm going to start with Bane. But as far as him, I think he's going to be an all-star this year. I'm going to stand on that. I'm going to make that prediction. Now, somebody yesterday, I can't remember who that was, said, man, they're calling you All-Star Bane. He's like, that's what they're calling me? They were like, yeah, man, that's what I'm hearing in the street saying, All-Star Bane. And he said that he doesn't really worry about accolades or kind of set himself up for any kind of goals, expectations. He says that if he plays well and the team wins, those accolades and expectations will take care of themselves. That's kind of what he said yesterday. But I think we're going to see what he like Kendon said, he didn't really start off well, but he did. There was a point in the season where he was averaging like 24, 25 points a game, just going nuts. And I think that's what we're going to see, especially his first 25 games. I think that's what we're going to see with Bane finally healthy. And I really do think that he has a real good shot at being an all-star. And I'm going to predict that he's an all-star this year. So that's my thoughts on Bane, man. I think he's going to have a big year. I think Luke Kennard, we haven't touched on Luke Kennard. I think he's going to have a big year as well. He kind of talked about coming in at the end, after the trade deadline last year, the second half of the season, him being here all summer, because I think he stayed in. He said he stayed in Memphis for a long time, working with the staff and everything like that. I think that's going to lead him to have a big year and them to figure out how to best deploy him off the bench or whereas he ends up in that starting small forward role for that 25 games. I think he still comes off the bench because I think they kind of like him in that role. I think it's going to be one of the three young guys that ends up with that spot to start the season. But I think Kennard's going to have a big year. I think his shooting is really going to help this team off the bench. With LaRavia and Roddy, as Candace said, I really don't really have any real expectations. I think whatever Zaire does is going to have a huge impact on how if they play or how much they play. I don't think you're going to – all three of those guys can't play. You might see two of them, but somebody's going to lose out on that battle. So that's something I'm going to be watching in these preseason games. Again, I mentioned that earlier. With Jiddy, I've never really had a problem with Jiddy. I had a problem with Jiddy in the role that they had him in for most of last year. Scannon said he kind of came back into his own a little bit in the playoffs. He had that monster game against the Lakers at those blocks against AD at the rim. If he could just get back to that and the rebounding and just get some shots to fall. Last year, he just, for some reason, man, he couldn't get his shot to fall like he had the year prior. And that was one of the reasons
why. They overused the quota. That's what happened.
Yeah,
he got a certain amount per year. They used it up.
Yeah, you can't have any expectations on Jiddy. Jiddy's just a guy that comes in when you need some spot minutes to do what he needs to do. If you're dependent on him to be a guy for you, that's too much of a role for him. Me and Candace kind of talked about that all last season. That's just not where you want to be with him. With GG, that's my guy, man. I have I'm a big believer in his potential. He was talking yesterday, and he was just speaking about playing pickup with some of the veteran guys. And he was saying he got to get to the corner. We've seen this staff kind of do that with wings that come in. I hope that's not the case. Hopefully he was just speaking on playing pickup basketball. We did see that a little bit in Summer League. He had that big game. And then for the rest of the Summer League, they just kind of had him going to the corner. Hopefully they lay down in South Haven. They let him cook, because he's a tremendous ISO scorer. You don't want to take that away from his game. So hopefully he was just talking about pickup because I don't want to see them just kind of take his game and try to fit him into a box. We've kind of seen him do that with young guys before. I just think if you're going to draft a guy, you know what you're getting, and you watch the tape on GG, you know he's a guy that likes to handle the ball, likes to go one-on-one, man. Just don't totally take that away from his game. I understand that he's – if he does ever get any minutes this season with the Grizzlies, that's not going to be the role because he's just not going to have that type of usage. But, man, don't take that away from his game. That's what I got to say about the GG situation. I'm trying to see if I've forgotten anybody else. And I guess I'll go ahead into Derrick Rose. I know a lot of people think that they just brought him in.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
We're gonna save him for the end.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't looping him in the group. I wanted to talk about him and Marcus Smart separately.
Okay, Smart. I haven't touched on Smart.
Yeah. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about Marcus Smart. One of the things in his media availability and some of the other guys mentioned it. The young guys, like he was in and immediately talking about defense, like things that he does on the defensive end of the floor. And another thing that was mentioned, there's been a lot of chatter about his size. Well, Dylan was 6'7", Marcus Smart 6'4". Dylan's a more versatile defender. What's that going to look like with Marcus Smart? Is he going to be able to guard this or that or whatever? And Sane asked him about that yesterday, and he said, let those people talk. I'm going to go out there and do what I do. Let's see if they're still talking at the end of the season. So, he also mentioned – I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly how he said it, but basically he was saying, I didn't win that Defensive Player of the Year for no reason a couple years ago. Let me back up. If this team allowed Dylan Brooks to walk and didn't go and get a replacement, I think that they would have been in trouble. Not like falling out of the play-in in trouble, but if you lose your best wing defender and you don't go out and replace him, that there's going to be issues for you. Not only did they replace him, they upgraded him. You don't have the size. Marcus Smart is not as big as Dylan Brooks. But I think defensive versatility-wise, those two are going to be neck and neck, and I think that Smart is a better defender than Dylan Brooks. The area where I feel like was the biggest upgrade is adding Marcus Smart to this roster gives you another guy that can create for his teammates. Yeah. Dylan Brooks could create for himself, not as high of a level that he thought. Like, he was never even close to the level that he thought he was, but he could create for himself. He was never able to add the part of like playmaking for his teammates as a crew, like an important part of his game. He could never get there. You could see that the coaching staff was getting, like, they were trying to get him there, but it just wasn't happening. It wasn't natural for him. So Smart is not an efficient offensive guy, but he can and is a far better playmaker than Dylan Brooks will ever be in his career. So I love the move. Obviously, he adds another incredible defender on the team and makes this team, who was already good defensively, even better. But I think that I like what he adds to the offensive end of the floor more so than what he added defensively. I think the gap between him and Dylan defensively was not as big as the gap between him and Dylan offensively.
Yeah, Isaac, I'll let you go ahead and go. I know you got some passionate feelings about.
Yeah, man, Marcus Smart is definitely, I agree with David, an upgrade in a lot of areas. I think intangibles, locker room, definitely upgrade in that area. I think he's more of a leader. And they're going to be more of a leader and a veteran president in this locker room than Dylan Brooks. That's not to take anything away from Dylan Brooks. I just think Marcus Smart for that role as being a leader, a mentor, a guy who's been there, been in those playoff battles. I don't know if you could have brought a better guy in. As David said, the playmaking, definitely an upgrade. A guy, he can play the one, he can play the two, he can play some small ball three for you. Dylan wasn't able to do that. Dylan couldn't line up and play the one for you. Marcus Smart can do that. He can set up his teammates. Also, efficiency-wise, even though Marcus Smart is not the most efficient player in the world, he's an upgrade efficiency-wise over Dylan Brooks. And he's not going to go out there and go be 0-for-12 from three and just keep shooting, just bombs away. He's most. There aren't too many guys that are going to do that. Most guys, if they're missing shots like that, eventually they're going to rein it in. So you don't have to worry about Marcus Smart going out there being that inefficient. So that's an upgrade in itself. In the regular season, the size thing, I've kind of talked about that. In the regular season, I don't think it'll be a problem at all. Like, I'm not concerned about it at all. I think in the regular season, it's going to be great. But when you get it in the playoffs and you're going up against a team, say the big team, say like the Lakers, or maybe if you made it to the NBA Finals and you're going up against a team like Boston that has a lot of big wing guys, I do think it could end up being a problem. He could get in foul trouble, and they just don't have a lot of size on the wing. You have guys like Luke Kennard, but none of those guys are guys that are going to come go in there and lock anybody down. I think it could become a problem in a playoff series against a bigger team. I don't think it'll be any issue in the regular season, but I think when you get in those playoff battles against teams with bigger wings, I still would have liked them to see them go out, even if it was a backup guy. Not a guy that come in and score, just a guy that could come in and play a little bit of defense. The roster with the guys that they have with Z and LaRavia and Roddy, they weren't going to get rid of any of those guys, so it really wasn't any space for a guy like that. But I wish they had a guy like that on the roster. I'm not concerned about it in the regular season, but I do think it could become a problem as you get deep in the playoffs and you're trying to make a run and you get in a game where he gets into foul trouble. Then where are you going? You hope Z can be that player. I mean, he has the size of the length to be that kind of defender that we've liked, but we just haven't seen it consistently. It's consistently, and I don't know if right now I feel like you can count on that. But that's kind of my thoughts on Marcus Smart. I love the addition. I think he's going to be fantastic for this team on and off the floor. But that's just kind of my only concern with it is you get into those playoff matchups against, like we saw against the Lakers last year, just bringing in those guys like Hatchinburg. They're just throwing these big wings at you, and they just struggle defending them. And I think this team is even smaller now. I just think that could become an issue in a situation like that.
Hold on. Candace, I'm going to let you go, but are you sitting here telling me that you think that Marcus Smart cannot guard Rui Hachimura?
I'm not saying that I don't think he can guard Rui Hachimura. I just think if you're going to only have one wing defender on your team, I don't like the fact that he's 6'3 or 6'4. If that's the only one that you have, like, because it's already, I feel like you're making a little bit of a compensation having him be smaller. Then if he's off the floor, then what are you doing? Because, I mean, he can't play the whole game, and he also could get in foul trouble. What if he gets in foul trouble? Then, like, what are you doing?
Than Dylan. He's better at that than Dylan. I'll say that.
I think they need another guy. Like, I understand that they have Sweat Equity and all those young guys, but I just think they have a lot of redundancy on the roster with those young guys. Like, they should have, to me, tried to find a way to consolidate some of that. I think they have a lot of guys on the roster that because one of those guys is going to end up not playing. Like, you're not going to play all three of those young guys. I just feel like they should have found a way to kind of consolidate that and bring in a veteran guy, like with 6'7", 6'8", wing, not necessarily somebody that can come in and that's going to score 10, 15 points for you, just somebody that can come in that you could throw in there when Marcus Smart is off the floor to kind of defend guys. That's where I am on. Like, I love Marcus Smart. Like, he was one of my favorite non-Grizzly players in the league. It's just when you think about the roster and you don't really have anybody above 6'4 that you can count on to defend on a wing, that could be scary. I mean, that's a little thin there. That's just the way I see it.
I genuinely would say I agree with Isaac on most points. I think including the loving Marcus Smart, loving the move, and even agreeing that in the playoffs, and I do feel it is exclusive to the playoffs, that it could be a size issue. The only place I sort of venture a little bit is that I just have a little bit more faith in the front office. So I get their strategy and wanting to see what Zaire or one of these other wings can do, because I do agree that in the playoffs, yeah, you need another wing. And they're hoping that Z can be that guy. And so before they make a consolidation move, because you're right, also I think there is some redundancy on the roster, and I do think they could clear some of that up. I think they want to see what the guys can do first, because it's a playoff scenario. I'm fine waiting to trade deadline and seeing what you have. I hope that's what their thought process is. And it may not be, right? But like the reason I'm okay with it is because I've sort of have faith that they just want to put their eggs in the basket and see where they are. And that's another reason why they held out Zaire. They want to give him, I mean, in the summer league, they want to give him all the runway they can for regular season games and see what he looks like. Because I think it's an important year for him in terms of, you know, if he's going to contribute or not. And again, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm fine letting it play out some in the regular season, because I don't think it'll be an issue in the regular season. And then they'll make a decision on if they need to make a Luke Kennard type. I mean, obviously that was shooting, but like, you know, an accusation like that, they've shown they're willing to do it last year. So I'm going to go with that mindset and say, if it's looking like it'll be a big, if it's looking like, hey, that's a hole, that's an issue. And I think you'll be able to tell, because I think there'll be some regular season games that they can win, but that it was a problem, right? Like, I don't think the size issue will sneak up on them. I think they'll find ways around it, but it'll be understood. It's kind of like with the half-court offense, right? Like, they were fine in the regular season, but it was understood that it was a flaw in the team. And so, anyway, that's sort of my thought on it. It's pretty much the same, but I think we've got some time to nail that piece down, because I'm fine. I think if they've got a rotational piece off the bench, then you can just play matchups, right? And it's about how you're going to use the rotations and how you're going to match the team up. But you'd be better off personnel wise if like a Zaire could stand up. I mean, and you've seen him in playoff scenarios. So if Zaire could be the guy he was in the playoffs when he played, then I think that does just fine. I mean, he's proven at the moment doesn't necessarily have to be too big for him, as long as he's got the confidence, you know, for himself behind him. So we'll see, a lot to play out, but overall, super excited about the acquisition of Marcus. And I think he is a huge upgrade for the team. Now, I guess if I had to throw a concern out there, it'd be a little bit, because I'm hearing a lot about defense and want to make sure that offense is also is equally valued, because this team wasn't a bad defensive team. They were top defensive team anyway. So can they be better offensively or more efficient offensively? Hopefully, the coaching staff is looking at that too, and not everything just from a defensive perspective.
I done some digging on the stats while you guys were chatting up about Marcus Smart there. So he played 61 regular season games last year. In the 61 regular season games, he had 9 games where he had 5 personal fouls or more, so 5 or fouled out. In those 9 games, he averaged just under 30 minutes a game. In the 20 games that he played in the playoffs last year, he didn't have a single game that he had more than 4 personal fouls. So, like, I'm not naive enough to sit here and be like, he's not going to ever be in foul trouble. Like, it's not impossible. But
I'm going to say, but he's playing on a team that had Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. No, that's a little bit different. Like, he's in a little bit different role on this team than he was on that one. They got long wings that he was playing next to, too. That's a big, big team he was playing on. So that's a little bit different. Like, he's going to be asked to do a little bit more as far as guarding bigger wings on this team.
Who is guarding the best player on the team?
I mean, like I said, I'm not saying that he can't do it. I just don't think it's 100% ideal to start 6'3", 6'4", 6'6", 6'7". I just think that's not 100% ideal. Like, can you get away with it in regular season? I don't think there's going to be any question at all. Like Candace said, there are going to be times where you can see that it might be an issue, but they still might even end up winning those games. But I just wish they had another wing. Like, there's a wing that you can count on. Now, maybe
they do. His name is Zaire. You're going to see.
Maybe David Roddy and Jake LaRavia emerges as that. I can't say that. I'm just speaking on right now. Like, that's what I feel about it right now.
If it ain't Zaire, I'm team trade for somebody. If Zaire can't figure it out, I'm team trade for somebody. I don't want to. LaRavia ain't got the foot speed come playoff time.
Hey, man. I'm trying to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. Like, I've been hard on LaRavia, man. I'm just giving these guys the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they surprise me. I'm with you. Like, I agree with you, but I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt and see if they take a crazy leap. I'm not expecting it, but we'll see.
Playoffs different. I, even if they do great in the regular season, I don't want to see that. I don't want to depend on that playoffs. Me personally, but it's so, just me.
But Roddy didn't do bad last year when he was in the series against the Lakers. They had him guarding LeBron, and I feel like he held his own out there. Like, was he spectacular? No, but did he go out there and get played off the floor? I think the answer to that is no also. So, you know, the growth from year one to year two, is he going to turn into a lockdown defender? I don't know that that's going to be the case, but I definitely have, whenever it comes to defensively matching up against somebody, I have more faith in Roddy than when I do LaRavia at this point.
Oh, 100%.
Roddy doesn't fix your size issue.
I just, like I said, when you look at Boston and Marcus Smart, it's just different. When you're playing next to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum versus playing against next to Ja Morant and Desmond Bain, it's just not quite the same thing. Like, he's going to have to take on the
I would say the role. Front court is better. I mean, honestly, I feel like Jaren Jackson Jr. and Steven Adams is a better front court. I do hear you, but also I just feel like the deficiencies sort of flip where, yeah, you're right, like, you know, as a guard, yeah, the people around him were better, but when you're playing with Jaren and then Steve-O, I just sort of feel like I do get your point, but I think it offsets too, just in terms of how the teams are constructed in terms of strengths. Their length is, you know, on their forwards and stuff. So,
yeah, and that's like, I'm definitely not dismissive of the point that you're making. Like, I think that there is definitely a possibility that could be a problem for them.
Yeah.
But I also, like, I watched Marcus Smart play a lot, and even at his size, you know, like, it's, how big was Tony Allen? I guess he's still the same size. He didn't shrink, but how tall was Tony Allen?
I think he's listed at 6'5", I think.
That's what they listed at.
Yeah,
I didn't think that he was that tall. I thought he was like a 6'3", 6'4".
I don't know if he really is 6'5", but I don't think he is. Like, I've stood next to him. I'm 6'4". I don't know if he's really 6'5", but I think that's what they had him listed as. You know, they jack a lot of those guys' height and weight up for some reason. But I don't think he's really 6'5", but I think that's what they had him listed. Yeah, if it's not 6'5", 6'4".
Yeah, last measurement was 6'4". And they've got Marcus Smart listed as 6'4", too. But I definitely get it. Again, I'm not dismissive of the point that you're trying to make. But we'll move on from Marcus Smart. We've been going here. I think we're definitely north of an hour at this point. So we'll try and wrap it up. Before we end the show with Derrick Rose, I want to talk about, like, the Vegas over-under and kind of get your projection on that. Let's try and keep this part of it brief so we can kind of talk about Derrick Rose, because I've got quite a bit on him, and I'm sure that you guys do as well. Vegas has Memphis finishing first in the Southwest Division, and they've got them at 45.
God, I'm actually surprised at that.
45 and a half on the win total. Are you taking the over under on that, Isaac?
But 100% over. I'm kind of surprised at Vegas. I know how they usually downgrade the Grizzlies. I'm surprised they haven't been first at 45 wins, but you said 45 is what they have them at?
But 45 and a half is what they've got them at.
Yeah, I think easy over. I think they win 50 games. I think a lot of people expect them to, for some reason, if they haven't paid attention to this team the last two or three years, that without Ja Morant, even though they want to say, they talk about the team's better or worse without Ja Morant, we've seen this team continue to be able to win games. And like I'm saying, 25 games, I still think they could go something like 15-10. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all. So I don't think that's going to be a big deal. So I think they still stay at 50. I think they get 50 wins. I'm going to take easy over on that.
Candace, what do you say?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm going to go. I go 51. 51 wins is what I got, but definitely over. I don't know. They always find a reason to sort of – I feel like that's been the over-under for years. I mean, I got to go back and check, but I just feel like –
40. Last year, I think it was they had a real low. It was like 42 or something last year.
Yeah, it was like 42 and a half. Like,
they were really disrespecting them last year. But.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that they get north of 50 wins this year.
Yeah.
I really like the way that this team is constructed. And, you know, Derrick Rose, when they made that signing, I was very clear about I like the signing because of the veteran leadership that he was bringing to this team. But I also said, you know, people have this expectation that you're going to get this absolute baller Derrick Rose, or this version of Derrick Rose that I don't believe exists anymore. I think that I thought he was going to be more of a Udonis Haslem type add to this team, which is still a huge positive. Having a veteran that can have that type of impact on these young players is huge. So I don't want to undersell the type of impact that he can have if he's just a voice for this team. But, you know, listening to him talk during media day, he talks about, you know, how he can come in and be himself, and he feels like he's still got plenty in the tank. So he's going to go out and he's like, I don't have to prove anything. I just have to go out there and play and be me. I still don't believe, like, I think that he ends up being somewhere in between. I think that he's more UD than what some people are thinking, you know, that like he's going to be a playoff rotation player. I still don't believe that his body is going to hold up and that he's going to be healthy enough to be a playoff rotation player. If that happens, that's great news for the Grizzlies. Like, you're playing with house money. If you get Derrick Rose that's playing at a high level as a playoff rotation player heading into year, I think this is 17 for him. If you get that, that's great. But for me personally, I don't expect that. I think that he's going to be great in the locker room. I think that there are going to be times during the regular season that he helps this team win games playing on the floor. But come playoff time, I don't expect him to be healthy and be an impactful player. I'm going to leave that part. Like, as far as impact on the season, that's what I'm going to leave it at that. But I've got to talk about – sorry, Isaac, I don't mean to cut you off. I got to talk about the way he commanded that room. You know, everybody came in, Bane and Jaren, and, you know, like, these guys came in, and Marcus Smart, like, their interviews were fantastic. But since yesterday, I've been trying to think of a way to truly articulate – the way that the command the room is the best thing that I got, but that's not even doing it justice. It was, man, I don't know. I don't want to exaggerate. I don't want to overdo it, but he was beyond expectations for me whenever he came in there, and he was just like open about everything, like straight to the point. There was no fluff in there. He wasn't scared to tell you what he thought about the situation or how he was going to approach a situation. And it was just refreshing. Like, you don't always get a bunch of fluff. Like, you get a lot of guys that give you true, legitimate answers. And then you get some guys that are just like checked out. They're there because they have to be. But the time that Derrick Rose was sitting down at that table, from the moment he sat down until he got up to leave, the atmosphere in that room was just completely different. And it was like one of like the best experiences that I've had in my life. And that's, you know, there are things in my life that kind of rank above it, but it was just almost a surreal feeling sitting there and watching him command that kind of attention and just dominate that room.
Yeah, man, I was super impressed by me and Sane. We're talking about it this morning, man. If you're in your 30s and you were in Memphis and you were here during his time playing at the University of Memphis, you wouldn't even recognize that guy that we saw yesterday. I mean, when he did interviews, he'd give you one word answers, barely say anything. He was super shy. He even spoke to it himself. I don't think this is saying anything bad about him. He even said it himself that when he was at Memphis, he couldn't articulate what he wanted to say. He said that in an interview yesterday on Grind City Media that he just really couldn't express himself, and it couldn't be even any more night and day. Just even him as a person, man, like seeing him with his family and his kids, just seeing that super immature kid that was here at Memphis, to see the growth that he's going through, because he's going through a lot. And that's why I think that's really valuable for Ja, because not only is Ja, like as far as the type of basketball player that Derrick Rose was coming into the league, very similar. Just got a burst on the scene, these athletic freak point guards, some stuff that you've never seen from the point guard position to off the court transgressions. I mean, he's seen it and done it all. Been in the NCAA championship. I mean, he's a basketball encyclopedia. In a way that you couldn't find a better guy to be in Ja's ear. And again, I like the fact that Ja respects him. So I think he's a guy that he will actually listen to. But yeah, man, listen to those interviews yesterday. You wouldn't even believe that was the same guy. I mean, the way that he just expressed everything that he wanted to say, man, it was wonderful to watch. I'm right there with David. I wasn't actually at Media Day, but you could feel it on the videos that it was different. And that's not to take away from any other guys or how great the interview was. Marcus Smart, all those guys were great. But Derrick Rose was a little bit different, just on a different level of the way that he was talking about different things and different situations. And that's why I think he's so valuable for this team. I mean, I think you saw that yesterday, the presence that he can have. He was saying today in an interview that he's still kind of shy. He's not never been a guy that's going to be super vocal. I mean, he said Taylor Jenkins is steadily on him to, when he sees something, say it. Like he could be an extension of his coaching staff, because just like I said, he's seen so much that when pointed out, like, get on these guys. When you see something they're doing wrong, yeah, man, by all means, say it. Like Taylor Jenkins wants him to be that vocal guy, and he said he's trying to do that. He said usually he would just kind of do his talking on the floor or just kind of keep it inside. But he said, man, he's making a focus now to, with the role that he's in on this team, being that veteran, 17-year veteran, that he has a lot of knowledge to give these guys. And I think he's realizing that, man. It's just wonderful. As David said, man, it was special listening to those interviews. And I'm just glad he's a part of this organization, man. I think it's just a big-time positive. And I think I believe I'm a little bit different than David. I think he's going to have a little bit more of impact on the floor than people think. As if his body holds up, I think the fact that he knows how – people in Memphis feel about him. And I think that is going to help fuel him to kind of stay together and try to keep his body right. Cause I think he wants to go out and perform for this city. I think he understands how much that means for the city. And when you look at the way the roster is set up, especially when Ja comes back, Marcus Smart's going to start. Like, I know a lot of people are saying that he should come out the bench. They didn't bring him here to come out the bench. So if both of those guys are starting, you do have guys in Desmond Bain and Luke Kennard that you can put on the ball in staggered lineups, but there's going to be times where guys get in foul trouble. There's going to be times where they need him to play. I mean, because essentially, I mean, he's the backup point guard. I know, like I said, you have those other two guys that you can put on the ball, but roster building wise, he's essentially your backup point guard. I think he's going to have to play. And again, there were times where he's played the last couple of years. He's not that athletic marvel that he was coming in as a young guy, but he's super smart. He's strong, man. He can back down smaller guards. He can still score at the basket. He's worked on his shooting. That's evolved. He's more of a shooter than he was early in his career. I think he's going to help this team at times, whether he's healthy enough to play in the playoffs or be in a rotation. We'll see. But I do think he's going to play a little bit more than I think some people do if his body holds up.
Yeah. I will first speak to his press conference, which I agree with both of you, for me was just extremely profound. You can hear the wisdom and his genuineness in his response that I just think is authentic in a way that I think will really help Ja. Like, I don't think it'll be forced, because like David said, he's just got that command, and Ja really respects authenticity, and Derrick Rose is just so much of that in pretty much everything that he does. That, and I kind of think they have some similarities in some ways. I mean, not just in their stories, but like in personality. I think while Ja can't be more brash, obviously he wasn't shy or anything coming into the league. I think in terms of what they value, their loyalty and just sort of how they see different things, just kind of hearing Derrick Rose talk, I can see how that's somewhat what Ja's mindset has been, at least in the past in some regards. And so just really excited for that. But perhaps maybe I'm the highest on Derrick Rose and his basketball impact. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a world beater or anything, But I guess I compare, right? So up until when Derrick Rose was playing half the minutes, he averaged 5 points a game. But before that, when he's getting like 24 minutes, he averaged like what, like 12 points a game? No, yeah, 12 points a game. Okay. Tyus, in his time with Memphis, averaged anywhere from 6 points per game to 10 points per game. And we know some of that, especially the 10 points per game last year, was skewed by his starting, right? Like when he started in place for Ja, he did very well. But, I mean, can he not give you 6 to 8 points per game?
I think so. I don't see
how there's such a huge drop off. The different styles, but like Isaac was saying, he's a smarter player. He's gotten better at his shooting. He's obviously a good decision maker in getting people involved around him. He can do that. I don't see how that's just so dramatically different from what Tyus was giving you as the backup. Now, I know what Tyus gave you as a starter was very different, and that Derrick Rose can't give you that. Now, David, you're right in terms of how long can his body hold up? That's obviously a question mark, and yeah, maybe he can't help you in the playoffs, but to be honest, outside of the Timberwolves game, how big of a part was Tyus in the game plan? Not very big. So I don't think that's just a huge loss. I think Smart can just give you that, and you probably want him to give you that anyway, defensively. So I think his impact will be meaningful. I just don't see this huge drop-off that people see between what Tyus gave you and what Derrick Rose can give you now. Will it be the same? No. Would it look the same? No. But production-wise, I don't think it'll be dramatically different. I don't think he gives you 2 points a game.
I was going to say, really quickly, I forgot to mention, I love that he kind of revealed the way that this kind of came together and him ended up with the Grizzlies. And I really loved what I heard there, because it shows you how much that he really wanted to be here. It wasn't just the Grizzlies reaching out. It was more of on his end. He said he reached out, I think, to Tony Allen to get T. Morant's number, and he called and talked to T and Ja, I guess, about the team and about coming here, and that's just kind of how that happened. And I loved it when I heard that, because I think that just shows you that he genuinely wanted to be here. There were some reports that it was between the Grizzlies and the Lakers, but I think it was the Grizzlies all the time. I think this is where he wanted to be, reaching out to Ja. I just think that's great, and that just even feeds into even more just kind of the relationship those two will have.
Yeah, just like put that on a loop where he's telling that story and hook it to me, man. Because how many times do we hear, oh, you're not going to get free agents to Memphis? And like, is Derrick Rose a massive free agent signing, like all-star caliber player that they brought to Memphis? At this point in his career, the answer is no. But Derrick Rose could have went any damn where he wanted to. Anywhere he wanted to play on a contending team. The Suns need a guard. If he was wanting to go and play.
Oh, 100%.
You know, like, he could have went there. He could have went to Los Angeles. He could have went anywhere, and he chose to come to Memphis. Talent is going to attract talent. And Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane, that core of players, they are going to attract talent. And this is just, I think, the beginning of the kind of talent that they're going to attract to Memphis. And I love every single second of it. So I don't like, we covered most everything for media day. We talked about nearly everybody. We gave some guys more time. You know, we obviously probably didn't give Desmond Bane as much time as he deserves, but I think that from everything that I have read and all the discussions that I've had, I feel like most everybody's on the same page that our expectations for Desmond Bane this year are all-star level. And so, you know, we didn't talk about him a ton, but I don't think you have to talk about him a ton to know, hey, like, he's going to kill it this year. That's what expectations are. That's what he expects. And I think that he's going to be ready to do that. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
I was going to say, I saw Norm Powell yesterday said that he's going to be an all-star this year. I was like, Desmond Bane has entered the chat. Like, I think you got some competition out there, Norm Powell. I think Desmond Bane, man, might be a little bit ahead of you in that vein. But, yeah, man, I think we're all in agreement. I think we we all feel like Bane's going to have a monster year. I think it's going to be a lot closer to what we saw in that stretch early in the season. That's not taking anything away. He was still really good even after then, but you could tell that toe was bothering him. For him to be healthy, I think he's going to have a massive year. I don't have any questions about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I don't have anything to add. Just look forward to – I'm really excited about the outlook on the team. I'm feeling a lot better going into this season than I did last season. Last season there where I felt like there were some roster construction issues and stuff. And while there are always going to be things you think could be better about the team construction, I feel really good about the place where the team is at. And I think they have done it, put themselves at least in the right position to be able to make a deep playoff run. So that's exciting to see.
Yep. Shout out to at Grizz Next Gen on Twitter. He was the winner. We gave away two tickets to the preseason opener against the Pacers. He won the tickets, so we got them to him today. He was a little bit slow to respond. I almost thought I was going to have to give them to somebody else if he hadn't answered by 5, but he did get back to me. So
gonna be the Zaire show, man. Zaire show.
It is. I'm ready for it. So. You know, if you guys are not following us on Twitter, you can get the show at Ethos Grizzlies. Go over and check us out. We gave away the tickets. We're still trying to get to 1,000 followers. We've been hovering right below that mark for a little while now. I'd like to see that number get up above 1,000. As soon as we get to 1,000, we have a Desmond Bane 8x10. It is JSA certified autograph. So I'm going to give that away when we get to 1,000 followers. I'm going to throw all the names into a randomizer, and one lucky person is going to get an autographed Desmond Bane 8x10. So go over, check us out at Ethos Grizzlies on Twitter. Wherever you're getting the show, like it, subscribe, 5-star review, all of those things to pump us up. We're going to do things a little bit differently this year. I'm not going to explain it on the show. You'll just kind of see as the season goes along, but we're going to get you more content and try and put together maybe some community things as the season goes along. So stay tuned for that. Appreciate you tuning in again. I'm on Twitter, or X, or whatever the heck we're going to call it at this point. I'm still going to call it Twitter because it is what it is.
That's what it is.
I am at NBA DWill21.
And you can find me on Twitter at CandiceH901. Looking forward to a great year. And for the first time in a long time, go Grizz. Isaac, take us home.
Yeah, man, as David said, I'm going to call it Twitter as well because the X is stupid. So it's still a Twitter app. When you send a message, what are you sending, an X? Like, I ain't down with that, man. It's Twitter, man. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. That's ISAAC _NBA. It's the first show of the season, man. I'll be better, I promise. But I'm excited, man, about this year. As Candace said, I feel better going into this season than I felt last year. I felt like there were some roster construction things going into last season. I feel much better about this. I feel better about the vets they brought in the locker room and Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose. And I think it's going to be a big year, man. Ready for Sunday night, ready to watch the small forward battle, and ready for 82 games. Hopefully we're playing into June, man. Hopefully we're talking about a title run, parade on Bill. That's always the goal. And those dreams are still possible. Right now, man. So it's wide open and I'm excited about it. Just glad to be back, man. Make sure you tune in, lock in with us at Ethos Grizzlies because we're going to be here all year, man. And we enjoy talking with the fans. Like David said, a lot of stuff coming up, more spaces, different things. So it's going to be fun, man. I'm excited about it. But until next time, everybody, thanks for everybody for tuning in and we're going.